got a 15-minute speech this time. Brian, you ready to start my time? All right. Let me go through Justin's speech and in trying a kind way to respond to some of the things that he said. And I don't have exact quotes, but I tried to write down in my own words what he said. First of all, he said something like, the people did away with the law by not obeying it. In a sense, that's true. But you remember from Colossians 2:14-17, it was more than that. Jesus did away with the law. Yes, they did away with the law in a sense by not obeying it. But what we're talking about, that's not what we're talking about tonight. Because when they didn't obey it and they did away with it, that didn't mean they weren't amenable to it. That didn't mean they weren't sinning when they didn't obey it. But when Jesus did away with the law, that means we're not sinning if we don't obey it anymore. When Jesus did away with animal sacrifices, that means we're not sinning when we don't do animal sacrifices. When Jesus did away with the law, including the Sabbath, that means we're not sinning when we don't keep the Sabbath anymore. And that's different than just doing away with it in the sense of not obeying it. For example, in Colossians 2, we pointed out that Jesus blotted out these handwriting of ordinances. It wasn't just that the people didn't obey it. He blotted them out. He took them out of the way and he nailed them to his cross. And it gives us some examples, not all of the laws, but it gives four categories of laws that he blotted out, took out of the way and nailed to the cross: the daily, which is the meat and the drink, the yearly, the seven holy days, the monthly, which is the new moon, and the weekly, the Sabbath. That means not just that people aren't obeying it when they should, that means they don't have to obey it anymore. And that's what this debate is all about. That's where we differ. So the Bible clearly shows in Colossians 2:14-17 that the Sabbath is no longer binding today. And I request that Justin respond to my point on that passage. And then Mr. Justin turned to Luke 16:17. I think he turned to this twice in his speech. And as he pointed out, verse 16 of Luke 16, he said, it sure sounds like Pat's position, and it does, that the law was until John. And that's right. Beginning with John and then Jesus, even during his ministry, they started preaching the kingdom of heaven. I call it preparatory teaching, since the new covenant didn't go into effect really until Acts chapter 2. But he said in verse 17, Mr. Kamiga did, that it is easier for heaven and earth to pass than one tittle of the law to fail. And I think his point was this. So we must still be under the law because it would be easier for heaven and earth to pass, and we see that it's not passed, for even one tittle of the law to fail. We must still be under the law. But I'd like you to turn to the parallel passage of this in Matthew. Everybody turn to Matthew chapter 5 because there's some information that if you just read that without reading the parallel passages that would be left out. Let's read Matthew 5:17-18, what Jesus said there. He says, think not that I am come to destroy the law or the prophets. I am not come to destroy, but to fulfill. For verily I say unto you, till heaven and earth pass, there's that expression, one jot or one tittle shall in no wise pass from the law, till all be fulfilled. Now what does that passage say in its essentials? It says Jesus didn't come to destroy the law. He's not going to just wipe off the map and say, everybody was wrong for obeying it. No. He didn't come to destroy it, but he came to fulfill it. And then he said, the next verse, it will not pass until it's fulfilled. Now ask yourself this question. Jesus said he came to fulfill it. Did he? You remember on the cross when he was almost dead, he said it was finished. Did he fulfill the law? Did he fulfill it in the sense that he obeyed all of the law without fault, without sin? Yes. Did he fulfill it in the sense that he fulfilled all the prophecies in the law concerning the promised Messiah? Yes. He fulfilled the law. That's what he came to do. And I'm sure that Mr. Justin will agree with me that he was successful in what he came to do, fulfill the law. What does verse 18 then imply about once he fulfilled the law? Once he fulfilled it, what would happen to it? It says it will not pass till it's fulfilled. Did he fulfill it? Now, this would be 3 years after, at least 3 years after this, when he finished and completed fulfilling it. But he said he came to fulfill it. He did fulfill it. Therefore, according to this passage, it passed. Do you see that? Here's an illustration I saw. I think Tim was from Gene Frost in one of his books one time. Good illustration. Should I have an appointment with the dentist, and I come into the dentist office and announce to the receptionist, I have come not to destroy my appointment, which means not go through with it, but to fulfill it. That would mean that I would complete all the appointment called for. I would have fulfilled the appointment, went through there and got my teeth clean, and not destroyed it. Would the appointment still be in force after I finished the appointment? No, it was fulfilled. So it was with Christ. When he fulfilled the law passed. He didn't destroy, he didn't cancel his appointment. I didn't cancel the appointment with the dentist. I went through with it. But once I went through with it and got my teeth clean, the appointment was gone. Not that I canceled it, but I did it. He fulfilled it, according to Matthew 5, that says then that the law would pass. And then Romans 3:31. Everybody turn there. Romans 3:31. Heath, while I'm turning there, go get my notebook off the table, Heath. Romans 3:31. Quickly. It's the pink notebook. In Romans 3:31, I want you to notice Justin's point is from verse 31. It says, "Do we then make void the law through faith? God forbid. Yea, we establish law." Now, what Justin, or what this context is doing, if you'll notice, in verse 27, it says, "Where is boasting then? It is excluded. By what law? Of works? Nay, but by the law of faith. Therefore, we conclude that a man is justified by faith without the deeds of the law." The point Paul is making here is basically that we're not under the law of Moses anymore. Now we're under the law of faith. Okay? But lest we get the wrong idea, he wants us to know that we're not without any law. He says, no, we're establishing law. Now, Tim knows a little bit of Greek here. I don't know it too much, but I think this is true. When you have the presence or not the article, our articles are like the and a. It doesn't really prove anything for sure, but I want you to notice in verse 31, if I point out to you that the article is not there, where you see the, it's not there in the Greek, it may help you to understand it, though I don't think it proves my point. He's not saying we established the law of Moses. That's what he just got through saying we're not justified by. He's saying we are established law without the article. What law is he establishing here? Not the law of Moses. That would defeat the whole purpose of the end of this chapter. The law he's establishing is the law of faith. That's verse 27, the law of Christ. What he's trying to say is, look, we're not justified by the law of Moses anymore. That law is not binding. Lest the Christians were to think, woo, I can live any old way I want to. There is no law. He says, no, we establish law. We're still under law. It's just a different law. Do you see the point? If this were talking about establishing the old law, the Old Testament law, verse 31, which it's not, but if it were, guess what it would establish? It would establish not only the Sabbath that we have to keep that, it would establish the animal sacrifices, the circumcision. It would be all of the law, not just one commandment in the law, but the whole thing. But it's obviously not doing that. Now, Justin made a point about the beginning, creation, when God created the earth in 7 days, or in 6 days actually, and then rested the seventh. And I think his point was this. He said some phrases like this. He says, this seventh day rest was before the law, meaning before Mount Sinai when the law was given. And that's true. That is true. God did rest on the Sabbath day, not on the Sabbath day, but on the seventh day of creation before Mount Sinai. That's true. But I'll suggest to you that he did not establish the Sabbath at that point. There was no record of him ever requiring the Sabbath upon people for them to rest on the seventh like he did until Mount Sinai. Actually, there was a precursor to that when they were gathering the manna in the wilderness, Exodus chapter 16. They said, I want you to gather as much manna as you need on the sixth day that you'll need on the sixth and the seventh so you don't have to do it on the seventh. But the Bible says in Nehemiah, thou camest down from Mount Sinai and made known unto them thy holy Sabbath. Ezekiel 20, wherefore I caused them to go forth out of the land of Egypt, and I gave them my Sabbath. So he never required a man to keep the Sabbath until in the time frame of Mount Sinai. But none of this really matters. It doesn't really matter when the Sabbath started, because when you realize you're under law to Christ, that means you're under law to Christ. You're not under the law to Adam. You're not under the law to Abraham. You're not under the law of Moses. None of that applies today unless the New Testament tells us that it applies. Here, let me illustrate it this way. Justin's point was this law, the Sabbath, he thinks was established before Mount Sinai. Therefore, it still applies today. I differ with that, but let's assume that he was right, that it was established way back yonder. Animal sacrifices started in Genesis 4:4. That was way before Mount Sinai. Does that prove that animal sacrifices are still binding today? We still have to do that? No. Circumcision was instituted with Abraham, I believe, before Mount Sinai. Does that prove that we're still supposed to keep circumcision just because it was instituted before Mount Sinai when we got the law of Moses? No. What about this little law that we're not real familiar with? In Genesis 38, verse 8, it talks about a man raising up seed to his brother. A man is married to a woman, my brother, and I'm single, and my brother dies with no children. I'm supposed to marry the woman to raise up seed to my brother. That was before Mount Sinai. Because it's before Mount Sinai, does that prove it's still binding today? No. Therefore, I suggest to you that even if the Sabbath was instituted in the creation week, which I don't believe it was, but even if it were, it wouldn't prove it's binding today. It has to be in the law of Christ to be binding today. My friend Justin then basically said, the main thing is God, not what day you worship on. I would agree with him that it's very important about who we're serving. God is important. But you cannot really separate loving God and also paying attention to what He said. For example, in John chapter 14, verse 15, Jesus said, "If you love me, keep my commandments." You can't really love God unless you keep His commandments. That's really the way we show that we do love God. You cannot separate the two. You can't say all that matters is God. It doesn't matter what day you worship on or any other kind of law that God had made. It all matters because God is the one that told us to do it. In Luke 6:46, Jesus said, "Why call you me Lord, Lord, and do not the things that I say?" It doesn't make any sense to say, "Oh, He's Lord, and that's all that counts. I don't have to worry about the day of worship. I don't have to worry about what He said." Jesus said that didn't make any sense. Hebrews 5:9 says, "Jesus became the author of eternal salvation to all them that obey Him," which means it's important to know Jesus and to love Jesus, but if we don't obey Him, we won't be saved. He's only the source, the author of eternal salvation to the ones that obey Him. So not only is it important to love God and recognize God, along with that, or included in that, Mr. Kamiga, is that we must obey what He says or we won't be saved. And that includes if God commands people to come together as a church and eat the Lord, to have a collection on the first day of the week, or He shows them through approved example that we should eat the Lord's Supper and have preaching on the first day of the week, Acts 20, verse 7, 1 Corinthians 16, 1 and 2. If we love God, we will keep His commandments. We will obey that. We won't do it on the Sabbath. We'll do it on the first day of the week, like the law of Christ specifies. You notice how serious it was when we went over Galatians chapter 5, verse 4. "Christ has become of no effect unto you. Whosoever of you are justified by the law, you are fallen from grace." My friend, who I love, Justin, is in effect doing this. He's trying to be justified by the law, by binding and saying we are to keep the Sabbath today. And when he does that, we are fallen from grace. That's how serious it is. How many minutes, Brian? 3 minutes. I want you to turn to 2 Corinthians chapter 3. Maybe we have enough time to do this. Well, I tell you what, no, we don't have enough time. So let's go to these two charts here. I want you to notice, if you're really going to keep the Sabbath, what Sabbath keeping demands. Galatians 5:3 says, "I testify again to every man that is circumcised, he is a debtor to do the whole law." So if you're going to try to pull one law from the Old Testament and say it's still binding, you're going to have to do everything. And the detail I'm emphasizing in this chart is you're going to have to keep the Sabbath the way the Israelites were told to keep the Sabbath. And I'll ask you Sabbath keepers if you do this. For example, in Exodus 20:31, and there's the passage in 35, you weren't to do any work. Okay, no work on the Sabbath. Exodus 35, verse 3, no fire on the Sabbath. Now, y'all correct me if I'm wrong, even in sub-zero weather, no fire, Exodus 35, verse 3, if you're going to keep the Sabbath according to the Israelites' law. Exodus 16, verse 23, no cooking on the Sabbath. Jeremiah 17, no carrying of a burden on the Sabbath. Are you with me? What about this one? Exodus 31, 35, Numbers 15, where the man was caught picking up sticks on the Sabbath. Breaking the Sabbath was penalized by death. Are you still with me? I think we got lost on that one. Maybe some of y'all were with me up until that, but we lost everybody on that one. You're not really keeping the Sabbath unless you follow the instructions that the Israelites were told about how to keep the Sabbath. It's more than just worshiping on Saturday. It's all of these things and perhaps some more that I left out. Next, I'd like to point out to you from Galatians 5:3, the same passages. "I testify again to every man that is circumcised, he is a debtor to do the whole law." If you're going to try to do one law, like circumcision or the Sabbath, and say it's still binding now, you're a debtor to do the whole law, which would include circumcision, the new moon observance. Do you guys do that? The Feast of Unleavened Bread. Do you guys do that? Now, if you're going to do one law, you're a debtor to do the whole thing. The Feast of Weeks or Pentecost, the Feast of the Trumpets, the Day of Atonement, do you practice that? Do you observe that? The Feast of Tabernacles, the Sabbath year, I think that was once every 7 years, and the year of Jubilee, once every 50 years, do you practice that? What about the laws of animal sacrifices and offerings? Do you practice that? The Bible says if you're going to try to do one law in the Old Testament and bring it forward, you are a debtor responsible to do the whole thing. The Levitical priesthood, many, many other laws. If you're binding the Sabbath, you must bind everything else also. Time. Thank you very much for your time, and I encourage you to listen very closely to what Mr. Kamiga has to say.